Let's talk state politics now with my two guests. And as you know, Queensland's voluntary assisted dying bill is now being debated by state parliament. It's been called euthanasia, or dying with dignity, or medical assisted suicide. The bill in Queensland's parliament is called voluntary assisted dying. It's expected to last for one more day in debate before members of parliament are given a conscience vote. The bill applies to terminally ill adults who've been assessed by two doctors 12 months out from a doctor's expected a prediction of death or passing away, and they have to have made three separate requests for assisted dying. If passed, Queensland will become the fifth state of Australia to legalise the practice. Tasmania, South Australia, Victoria and Western Australia have also passed voluntary assisted dying laws. This is Leanne Enoch in State Parliament speaking to it today.
Speaker, ultimately this bill speaks to values and our ability to see the world through the experiences of others. The stories of so many and their courage to share them is at the heart of this legislation. The valuing of those brave voices forms the compelling reason to see the legislation passed.
That's Leanne Enoch. A range of people have been speaking today. Let's speak with my guest, Graham Young, Executive Director of the Australian Institute for Progress. Thanks for coming in, Graham.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
Rachel Nolan is the Queensland Executive Director of the McKell Institute and the presenter of the podcast, The Deep North.
I am. Hi, Steve.
Welcome back. So just explain the significance, if you wouldn't mind, Rachel, as someone who's been a former cabinet minister, of a conscience vote. What does that mean other than a normal vote?
On issues, there are a very limited range of issues on which the thinking is that it cannot rationally be decided what is right or wrong. And one of those issues is the essential nature of life. And so on those limited issues, both major parties, as a general matter of policy, offer their members a conscience vote. That is, that you decide on your own conscience. The thinking behind it is that you can't force people by way of rational argument or party discipline to vote on a matter that cannot rationally be decided one way or another in accordance with party discipline. And so the classic conscience vote issues are abortion and euthanasia. It's also in more modern times been extended to issues around stem cell research, because the issues in stem cell research, the nature of stem cells and the question of when life begins, like the question of abortion, is seen as being something that cannot ultimately be known or decided by rational consideration.
Graham, is there any observation you want to draw about it being a conscience vote as opposed to a normal vote?
Well, I think in a sense they ought to be a redundancy. Labor's always taken a different view to Liberals in terms of conscience. For the Liberal Party, in theory, every vote is a conscience vote. You have the right to cross the floor. Any member of Parliament who exercised that right frequently probably wouldn't end up getting pre-selected again. It was something that was more current in the 70s than it is now, because the way the media narrative tends to work is that if you've got someone who crosses the floor, as George Christensen, for example, has at a federal level recently, and I think Matt Canavan might have as well, but the media narrative is that your party doesn't know what it's doing. So by default, it's tended to go to the ALP position, but in reality, on the my side of politics, you've got the right to cross the floor.
Okay. MPs have been recounting their own personal stories. It's been quite an emotional debate. One of my producers was listening to it intently today and she found it harrowing, just listening to it sort of remotely. But to me, one of the things that's troubling me is that this is missing the point of making law, that what the Parliament is not debating on whether or not you like the idea of VAD, but the Parliament is supposed to be debating and arguing and voting on robust law. In other words, good law, because once they pass it, it stays. you know, it has an ongoing effect. And so, and the argument is it shouldn't create problems that are greater than the problem it's trying to solve, if that makes sense. So can I get you to speak to that, Rachel? That there's been a lot of personal tales, but it's not an Oprah session. It's about making good law. I didn't mean to be flippant. I'm sorry.
No.
But the point, the Parliament's about making good law, and Queensland's got a unicameral, a one House of Parliament. It's not like the other states. Mm. So can you speak to that?
Yeah. I think it's an interesting observation that you make. A couple of points about it. You know, obviously law stays until it's repealed and until or unless it's repealed. And one of the interesting questions in this will be, given that by and large, notwithstanding the conscience vote, given that by and large LNP members are voting against, you know, while it will
not
pass.
Not all Tim Nichols, not is he?
No, not all. There are about...
Steve Minnickin is
Steve Minnickin as well. Okay.
They are. Dale Last, Tim Nichols, Stevens, Hart, O'Connor, Mulhock and Minnickin. So there are about seven. But to come back to your point, you know, it doesn't necessarily go on forever and could be repealed by a subsequent government. But to go to your substantive point, you know, it's not about how we feel. It's about good law. I understand the point that you're making that members of Parliament are often talking about their personal experiences or stories they've been told as they've consulted on this bill. I think that's a fair reflection on the debate, although I think it's more about, you know, often storytelling is a good means of communicating a point. So I would suggest that what's happening here is that members are expressing their view through storytelling. This has actually been one of the best considered and most precise and thoughtful examples of legislative development that I have ever seen.
The public consultation has been extensive.
It's gone to, I mean, obviously the idea of voluntary assisted dying legislation in Australia has been kicking around since about 1996 or seven was when it was legislated in the Northern Territory and then subsequently repealed by, I think, the Howard government. So, but in this case, in the case of the Queensland legislation, there's been a grassroots campaign around it by an organisation called Dying with Dignity for probably 30 years. More recently,
we spoke with the Clem Jones Trust yesterday, who've been pushing it for years.
That's right. Yeah. So, it's been, you know, kicking around for a long time. But in terms of this legislative process, there was a parliamentary committee which considered it in around about 2017-18. And then subsequently, the Queensland Law Reform Committee did a really detailed inquiry chaired by Justice Peter Applegarth, which made a series of recommendations which has led to the legislation. So I think your reflection, you know, people are talking about how they feel, not about the substance of the bill, is a fine one. But this is actually been deeply considered in a way that most legislation is not.
Graham, you want to speak to that before I raise another point?
Yeah, I think what it reflects is that we are dealing with an extraordinarily serious issue. This is the state legislating that in particular circumstances a life can be taken. And I don't think anyone takes that lightly. There are very high feelings out in the community on it, in both directions. If I was a member of Parliament, I wouldn't want to be taking the phone calls. So, and even thinking of how we were going to deal with it tonight, I've got some personal anecdotes that I can put on the table to show people how I understand the complexity and how I emotionally relate to it. And if I were a member of Parliament, I would be doing that so that whatever side of the debate you fell on, you would understand that not only had I thought about it, but I'd connected with it.
Yeah,
and you know, I think that's what's going on there. That they're reflecting the seriousness of it, and they're communicating, as they should, with their electorate. Because really, they do too much abstract talking at electors, and they do too much in slogans.
Yeah.
And they don't do enough in terms of concrete examples.
The public consultation was very extensive. I don't think I've ever seen something that's been so widely consulted in terms of a committee process in Queensland.
It was, but the Parliament is the primary decision maker.
Yep.
And I think I've got a couple of concerns about the decision-making process. One, we don't have an upper house. So in Victoria, where they first legislated it, amendments were made in the upper house which made it better legislation. We don't have that. We've got 54 amendments from various members of the Parliament, one of which went down yesterday from Robbie Katter, the member for Traeger. And the bill is being guillotined through. Now, I don't think that's appropriate to guillotine it through. I think it should take as long as it takes. And with 54 amendments, that could be quite a period of time. And I think there are some justified concerns about it, which I'm not sure. I haven't read all the consultations. I don't have time to do that. But I suspect that either they weren't part of the consultations or they've been added later. So there are some real issues there in terms of dealing with the issue. And you can't just say, well, we've had 12 months. And the other issue is that it was brought in the last election as an election issue and may well have played a part in Caloundra. Well, it was a promise that the Premier made. So even though we're having a conscience vote, the Premier basically said, I'm going to do this anyway.
Labour MPs are voting against it, as I understand it.
It was five, and there were seven in Victoria voted against, and five Liberals crossed and voted for.
I contacted the Premier's. I've been trying to get the Premier to give an interview about this, and unfortunately, despite saying she's happy to be interviewed, it never happens. And again today, the Premier's office said she wasn't available for interview. So I said, look, it's my understanding that there's not even going to be one single amendment to the bill. Not you know, writing the bill down, but given its importance and its significance and the passion and the work that's gone in, you'd think you'd try and reach across the chamber and bring the other side with you and say, okay, that, you know, there's an amendment there. We think, okay, maybe that amendment. There's not going to be one single amendment. No other state in Australia has been... I understand every state in Australia that's passed it has had amendments, and they've negotiated. There's been a negotiation process. Normal Parliament, I guess, right?
I think.
Are you surprised that not one single amendment in this bill?
I'm not surprised. Okay. I understand that there was the most substantive. There are two sets of substantive kind of reasons for amendment that have been proposed. One is the Robbie Katter thing that was. When the debate commenced, Robbie Katter said, let's not talk about this until we've dealt to a greater extent with palliative care services. And as Graham, I think, said, or one of you said, that didn't get up. That has to some extent been dealt with in that in preparing this legislation, the government did put... I think about an extra $170 million on the table for palliative care. So that one sort of becomes a moot point. But there's been a more recent push in the last week or so. Church-based and particularly Catholic institutions have sought to have an amendment. The way the legislation stands is that individuals, so individual doctors or nurses or aged care workers, can conscientiously object to being involved in voluntary assisted dying. Catholic institutions, as I understand it, commenced a sort of rearguard action
I think Wesley might have been in there as well.
Quite possibly. That would make sense. So let's say church-based commenced a rearguard action to seek to have whole institutions. So, you know, say the Wesley Church or Catholic aged care facilities, of which there are very many, for instance, to have whole institutions be able to... create a faith-based conscientious objection. And I understand that in the last week or so, the government fairly seriously considered that and decided instead to proceed with the legislation essentially in accordance with Peter Applegarth's recommendations and came to a view, therefore, that there was kind of nothing new on the table, that most of the proposed amendments that were now kicking around had been very carefully considered through the consultation phase, and that mucking around with it now might make it a weaker set of legislation. So I understand your point, you know, wouldn't it be good to have some back and forth across the table? But I understand the thinking is it's been well thought through. Let's keep it intact.
Graham?
Well, I disagree with Rachel on the... question of palliative care that it's been dealt with. The government's spending $171 million over 5 years extra. The AMA reckons they need to spend $250 million a year extra. So that's about 10 times over the increase. And the argument being mounted is twofold in terms of palliative care. One is that It's not widely available to people in regional and rural Australia, which is why the catters are particularly interested in it. The other argument is it's not as widely available to people who don't have private healthcare, which leads to the argument that basically if you're wealthy, you'll get palliative care, and if you're poor, you'll get euthanised. One of the things that I think everyone has to take account of in this legislation is that there are patients being... There are patients dying because of medical interventions in hospitals every day. And I'm not talking about mistakes. I'm talking about the fact that the law allows palliative care to be extended to the extent where your body shuts down. So effectively, morphine goes in, the organs end up, you're not in pain, but the organs end up shutting down. Doctors tell me that there's no reason why most people should die in any sort of pain at all. So in a sense, we've got euthanasia at the moment, but the doctors aren't doing it as a primary purpose. So that's part of the argument. Whereas euthanasia, you say you're in pain, and it can be mental as well as physical pain, and I'm not sure what that is. And then someone purposely puts you out of your life.
Finally, is it a secret ballot or is it a public ballot?
Like, no, you have to stand up.
So you've got to stand up.
Like everything in Parliament, okay. And it ought to be.
So it's a conscience vote.
Except for the election of the Speaker.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Right, okay. So the election of the Speaker is secret?
Yeah.
But that a conscience vote is very public?
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Any final comment you want to make very briefly?
I just want to respond to what Graham said, because it sort of suggests that it's somehow compulsory. You know, this is only providing a choice to people to go down a euthanasia path. It doesn't force them down that path, quite obviously.
Yep.
I think that needs to be clear.
Okay. All right, I have to leave it there. Graham Young and Rachel Noel, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Steve.
Pleasure, Steve.